Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. On this episode, the Oscars have finally came and went with a thwap. Now it's time to discuss. This is our 2022 Oscars recap episode. You know, the one where Chris got rocked. Shit. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today is my fellow co-host, Troy Heinrichs.
I really love Everybody Hates Chris.
Jeez, man.
It's a great show.
Hey, Troy. Troy.
Yes.
What did the five fingers say to the face? What? Slap! Oh, my God. We're making jokes, but this was literally public assault on a global scale.
I wish they would have had, when you do the debates, CNN or whatever, NPR has the poll tracker of, like, the line goes up or down when people agree with something they say and they disagree with something they say.
Yeah.
The poll tracker for the Oscars would look like 0 at the start of the show and 100 at the end of the show.
Yeah.
It literally was like this, like, mountain climb, like the Price is Right yodel guy going up to the cliff. And unfortunately, it actually went off the cliff, I think.
We'll talk about that in a little bit, and then we're going to talk about all the winners. We're going to talk about highlights from the ceremony. We're going to recap the winners and also some of the changes the Oscars made. And yes, Will Smith did literally smack Chris Rock live on TV, and it was not a stunt like everybody thought at the time. It was legit. I mean, the LAPD actually tried to get involved, and Chris Rock declined to press charges. But no, that was a real slap. If you've seen the video, that was not a stunt. That actually happened. We're going to talk about it. But first, we've got some other stuff to get into. So overall thoughts on this year's Oscars. You know, what did you think overall as a ceremony before we get into the nuts and bolts and winners? Overall.
Overall, it felt like a standard Oscars telecast. It went long. Some people got played off accidentally. The one poor guy. It's like, this is my one time I get a moment. He doesn't even get to say anything. That was pretty funny. The opening, I mean, sometimes the opening hits and sometimes the opening misses. I think this year the opening missed in a lot of ways. I mean, some good in the opening for sure. But overall, the general, like, to get into the show when you already have controversy and you already have awards that you've already excluded, especially Samuel L. Jackson's, I think that they missed the mark. And three hosts is definitely a very hard thing to do. We know it's hard to do on this show in particular. But the third host is always somebody that's just a repeat what somebody else said and laugh. And I felt that very much was the case during the initial opening with the three hosts up on stage. But I mean, overall, it was a pretty decent, straightforward night until that last hour.
Man. Yeah. Unlike you, I really liked Beyonce opening in Compton. I thought that was respectful to the movie that was nominated, of course, because it's about Venus and Serena Williams, who are from Compton, and hit the absolute heights in the sports universe. The love that was paid back to the community, I thought was really, really cool. But I get what you're saying. It took away a little bit from the intro because there's all of this fluff in this show, which they say that they're tightening up to make the runtime better so they juice ratings. None of that occurred. It still went the exact same length that it always goes. It went to like 10:30, 11 o'clock at night almost.
Yeah.
What the hell?
And the tennis green. So much tennis green. Like, you can throw a little contrast in there.
Yeah, it did need a little contrast. I mean, don't get me wrong, Beyonce, you're queen. And it was a beautiful, I mean, really, really, it was beautiful. And it was very cool the way that they had it staged and set up. It's just, it wasn't like, I get what you're saying. Your issue isn't with that. It's just, as a whole, there were so many of these kinds of things that took up too much time.
Correct.
They could have tripped. They had, well, we're going to talk about it, but they had a whole song performed, which was a great number, whether you like the song or not. I know you're not a fan of the song, but the number itself was a fun, and you know, we don't talk about Bruno, was a fun set piece, and a musical, you know, interlude was great, but it took up, there's what, 5-6 minutes that we didn't need. The song is not even nominated.
It's not even nominated. That was what I said. Nominated. I was like, it's like not even nominated. Why is this here?
Because it was one of the most popular songs of the year. That's why. But still, it also had a song that was nominated that was performed at the ceremony. So you just doubled down for entertainment value, which I get, but don't make the high and mighty choice to cut things down that are actually celebrating the artists that make the work. If you're going to then introduce additional fluff that we didn't need.
Yeah, you could have taken that song out and given Samuel L. Jackson his due.
Oh, 100%. Well, we'll get to that, but let's get into some of the details. And yes, we'll get to the thwapping. The thwappening? I don't know what you call it. And by the way, just Troy and I for this episode this week. A lot of that is because we had to record this super early in the morning because we wanted to get it out before, you know, as soon as possible after the Oscars. Otherwise, you know, if we listen to it 3 days later, is it really going to be as beneficial to you? So we're trying to get it out as fast as we could. And also in the same token, I mean, you know, it's been a crazy few weeks. It's been a really, really crazy few weeks. So thanks for joining me, Troy. I really do appreciate you getting up super early for this.
Yeah, I'm all for WWE SmackDown on a Monday.
All right, so let's talk about some of those changes this year. So if you didn't know, they were trying to shorten the show, allegedly, and jazz up the ratings. So they moved literally eight categories to what they call pre-Oscars. I think they called it the golden hour, whatever. And what they did was, it's the hour before the show started. So every, you know, while we were watching the red carpet and all that jive, they could technically just start the show at six. I'm just saying, would anybody care? Does it have to start at seven? I don't think so. Anyway, so that hour before, they had those categories then and all those speeches and whatnot. And then during the live telecast that we saw, we the people saw, they cut them in. And I think you could tell which ones were cut in pretty easily, film editing and, you know, a couple other ones. Because when they announced those categories, then bam, they're already up on stage. Now, the whole
And they didn't have a presenter to give the nominations. Right. It was a pre-roll recorded.
Because they'd already done all this. They just cut out the fat. Now, do you think, now that you've seen it and, you know, they introduce it, I think it saves you maybe, what, 30 seconds, a minute of time? So maybe 8 minutes, if you really, 8 to 10 minutes total of the whole show. Do you think, now that you've witnessed how they incorporated it, was it worth it or was it insulting to the artists?
I mean, as far as the telecast go, like I'm as a telecast viewer watcher, I still saw all the awards, right? Mm-hmm. I might have fallen asleep. Did they do it for Samuel Jackson's or no?
I might have fallen asleep. No, they didn't. They didn't do.
I didn't think they did.
They didn't do it because we should know. Samuel Jackson and Elaine May and Liv Ullmann and Danny Glover all won a special Governor's Award, or like a Lifetime Achievement Award, that was done Saturday night. Now, I will say, if you're trying to get ratings, maybe having one of the most, you know, popular actors of all time receive his award during the telecast would make sense. But you do you, Oscars.
Especially if you're going to cut in the ones that were in the golden hour prior. Like, you could have had that clip from the night before set and ready to go and just played it as a package also, right?
Yep.
But it was awkward. Like, Amy Schumer was sitting in the table next to Jesse Plemons after she booted Kirsten Dunst from the seat. And was like, oh, yeah, and by the way, those guys up there in the balcony, they won some award last night. It was yeah. really disrespectful.
So what's your ultimate verdict then, now that we've seen it in play? I mean,
I think the categories that they shortened down, I think it's fine. You don't need a presenter, right? Like, I think you could still do it during the course of the show and not have to do the hour before, but just skip the presenter part. That's really what you cut out. You basically cut out the presenter, because I still saw these are the five nominees for this category and the winner is, and they came up on stage, and yeah, it saved maybe 15 seconds of them walking up to the stage portion of it. But like at the end, there's still a lot they could have cut out, you know. The hosts, I'd be fine without the hosts.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think they each had moments. The hosts had moments.
For sure.
And we'll talk about the hosts in a second. But overall, I just thought you're supposed to, I get that you want to bring people back to watch the telecast. They're like, nobody wants to talk about the numbers declining because nobody watched movies last year and the year before. Like, nobody wants to mention that because everybody was watching TV shows. Because right. we're stuck at home, man. So, yeah, there's nothing to watch at the Oscars. I really feel like this year might be a little better. Next year, well, I don't know. I mean, it's going to look like trash at this point. Will Smith kind of just ruined the Oscars for a little while. But I thought it was disrespectful to the artists. And I think most movie fans that I know would rather at least see those artists respected, see those categories respected. Film editing is one you cut out. Film editing, that's literally how the movie is pieced together. So there's zero reason why that shouldn't be respected, in my opinion.
Yeah. Like, you know, film editing is like the one category that, like, yeah, sure, you need to direct and act and all this other stuff. But if you don't have the editor, yep. you don't got jack shit.
You got nothing, man. Nothing. Go watch Licorice Pizza again. Could have used a better editor. Just saying. So movie's way too long. So I thought that was kind of insulting. I thought you've got this whole argument that it's going to be shortening the show, and the show actually goes the exact same length, so you've done nothing different. There were some other things. The In Memoriam was a little too jovial.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it started out like kind of like, all right, this is different.
I mean, I get it. Thank you for being a friend. I get that.
Yeah. And then they were, and then they started like doing the jive and the jig and the whatnot. And it's like, and then it was too loud over when Bill Murray comes out and when then Jamie Lee Curtis comes out and gives their monologue for Ivan Reitman and Betty White. I mean, it was just like this should have been like a tender, bring the house down, cry your eyes out moment for those two people. And instead it was like, what is happening here? And why does Jamie Lee Curtis have a dog?
Yeah, there's a lot of what was happening here. What the hell was happening here? Ah, all right. Well, speaking of what's happening here, talk about the hosts. So we've got Amy Schumer, Wanda Sykes, and Regina Hall. And I kind of thought at first, oh, this is too much. Is this really going to work? I really didn't have much of a problem. The opening was a little clunky when they were together. But when they each kind of separate and do their individual things, I thought it really kind of worked. So what did you think overall on the three hosts?
Yeah, the opening monologue with the three of them on stage, it was kind of like, are you guys reading the teleprompter? Because it seems like you're just trying to do your own thing and step on each other. And it just was not working for me at all. And then when Amy came back out the second time to be individual, I'm like, didn't we just have an opening? Why is she out here doing another bit? Like, I get to the awards, you know, chop, chop. We already missed the first hour. Let's go ahead and not miss the second hour, too.
Yeah, that first hour, there were what, three awards?
Yeah.
Something. There was not much that was divvied out at that time.
No, there sure wasn't. And I think individually, the three women were funny at times. The only bit that I think that worked where all three of them were on stage together was the dressing up as the characters. I thought that was hysterical because
that was really funny. Yeah.
I never expected Amy Schumer to be hanging from wires in a Spider-Man costume.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
Ever.
Oh, jeez. And the pajamas, I thought was pretty good too.
Yeah.
At the very end when they're, unfortunately nobody really heard that, but or saw, you know, it was so quick and at the last thing of the night. So I'm wondering if people saw it. I dug Schumer's bit a lot. I loved Wanda Sykes running through the Academy Museum. I'm like, if you're going to do a full blown pimping and advertisement for your new museum, this is the way to do it. Make it funny. And especially her little nod to Harvey Weinstein. She passed one of the Lord of the Rings trolls or whatever.
Yeah, that was pretty good. But the museum's important. I mean, I'm glad that they like draw attention to it because I think like ABC, with the money that they pay the Oscars, like the money that ABC pays goes to basically fund the museum and keep it up and running. And then I'm trying to remember, there was the COVID test with Regina Hall and the, you people need to come backstage and you people need to come back. And you can see where this bit is going and you're just kind of like, okay, the bit's kind of funny. But then when it was Jason Momoa and was that Josh Brolin on stage and she was patting him down.
Doing a pat down.
I was like, okay, now we've gone into the cringeworthy space. Like, this is a little bit, you know?
And of course, I got a nice couple mentions from people because I thought it was really funny. And, you know, I put it in, we had a thread going in our Facebook group. And I said, I thought that was pretty funny. And then, of course, somebody had to make sure to make me know. If the genders were reversed, would this still play? You're right. You're fair.
And maybe that was the point of it, was to, like, point that out. Right. It was a political statement without making a political statement.
Sure, could be. Absolutely.
So people would talk about it.
I mean, it was a funny bit. I laughed. I mean, I did. I thought it was also nice to see Regina Hall get that kind of respect because I think too often her comedic talents are missed by people. Like, she's an extremely funny person.
I mean, the pat down, I think, went too far.
It depends. Yeah. I mean, the ladies, I think, were on Regina's side.
I'm sure they were.
Especially when she got to Momoa. And she's like, oh, there's a lot. There's a lot here.
There's a difference, funny. I think, though, in comedy. Like, and this goes to what we'll talk about later with Chris Rock and Will Smith. I think that there is a point where you get the point of the joke without having to take the joke too far, right? Like, we're going to go back and have the COVID tests, and I'm going to swab your mouth with my tongue. Like, that's funny. Like, that's pretty clever writing, right, for the joke. The pat down, I think, is where it goes a little bit too far because it's just the two of them on stage versus like all the guys that were called up there.
Yeah. I mean, I see what you're saying. I did like how Bradley Cooper seemed to be having a great time with it. I mean, he seemed to be all on board. Like,
oh, yeah. He was on board for sure. And then notice Will didn't even go up. And then Will didn't go up there at all on that one.
Uh-uh. Nope. Nope. Apparently, he was very sensitive last night.
Apparently.
Oh, man. Okay, well, so good for them. I really thought that it wouldn't work, but the three hosts worked fine. I just once again think you kept saying you were trying to keep the length down to bring people back, and there's nothing of evidence to show that you did this. This is one more thing.
When we used to have one host, and now we have three hosts, so we have three times the monologues that we have to get through.
Okay, so the musical numbers, you know, we had actually a lot of them. We had a lot of musical numbers. What was your favorite one? Which one really stood out to you of all of them? We had, you know, Be Alive from King Richard, Dos Oraguitos from Encanto. We had Down to Joy from Belfast. I don't think that one was performed, though. No Time to Die and Four Good Days. Somehow You Do from Four Good Days. Those are the ones that were nominated. What was your favorite musical number at the ceremony? Performed at the ceremony.
The Beyonce opening is great. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, the choreography, the coming down the street, the arriving at the tennis courts, the costuming, the everything about it is just fantastic, right? But then you go back and you sit there and go, how much money was just spent on 3.5 to 4 minutes of airtime when that money could have been done to spruce up the parks or go to a community center in the community or, you know, any kind of things that would be more beneficial to Compton than just getting like, hey guys, here's where Compton is on the map that someone's going to forget about the next day.
Yeah, I get what you're saying about that.
You know, but
and we don't know that they didn't. Maybe Beyonce, part of the deal. Maybe they cleaned up some parts of the area for that.
I don't know. That's what I hope happened. Like, that's the story that no one covers, right? Like, what happened after? Well,
not now. All they're going to be covering now is
Will Smith, right?
That's it.
But that's one thing that I wish the Oscars would do is like, hey, as part of this, like, we gave back to this community or we gave back to this organization, or they gave back just to let people don't have those questions when they see something like that happening. It would be great to have that in like the news cycle the next morning or something. Yeah. The Encanto performance is beautiful, right? Dos Oraguitos it was a very well done song.
Absolutely.
Very classy, right? Oscars type performance. Billie Eilish and her brother, obviously, really great job on their song as well. Just simple piano, simple vocal. I don't need the flashy. Like Bruno, it's fun. It's great. It's a Grammys performance. It's not an Oscars performance. I think that's the difference. Like, seeing that performance at the Grammys, I think would fit perfectly. Seeing it at the Oscars, not so much. And there were so many times during the performance that they would cut a camera angle and you could see the camera people in the shot. And it's like, guys, we got to do better.
What's funny to me is I think I really liked Beyonce's performance the best, but I don't like that song. I'm sorry, Beyonce. I don't like that song. No Time to Die is definitely the song that really sticks with me more. And it really, to me, felt the most Oscars, I think, is what kind of the simplicity of it. Like, it's the one that was very, very simple. So it kind of reminded me of Oscars classic versus, you're right, like a Grammys performance or an all out musical performance. And there's something about simplicity that really I think I enjoyed this year because there was so much going big in so many different aspects. It was kind of nice to just bring it down a little bit. And that's a great song. And Billie Eilish has a beautiful voice. So, you know, I think I enjoyed Beyonce's set piece more. I just don't like that song. So, I mean, once No Time to Die came, I'm like, all right, this is kind of everything I love about the Oscars in one performance in a way.
Because the thing with Oscars and the musical numbers, it's about this is the first time these songs have been performed live in a lot of the cases. And so you want to hear the song. You don't want to be distracted by the performance.
Right, right. Yep. All right, we'll move on. You know, one more time, let's mention the Bruno song. We Don't Talk About Bruno was not nominated for an Oscar yet because of the popularity. They played it there. And I thought it was funny because Troy's like, this song is not good the whole time. My wife's family, they're Hispanic. They love this song. But I kind of get what you're saying. I'm like, I don't get the appeal, but they seem to love it. And young people seem to love it. So obviously I'm wrong on this one. My taste is wrong.
It's one of the songs that are like, it's cute for the movie. You remember it for the movie. It's easy to sing along. But it's like the endings, to me, it's like, I didn't think the lyrics were well written because it's a lot of repetitive. And you get a lot of repetitive because it's something that you can remember and it's easy to sing and blah, blah. But it's not an Oscar song. And so, again, it felt like a stylized Grammys People's Choice Award performance and just felt out of place for the Oscars.
Now, there was a James Bond dedication complete with Sean White and Tony Hawk. And why are they introducing James Bond? I don't know, because there's extreme sports sometimes in the movies, whatever.
Yeah, you know, they do the half pike, triple Lindy, you know, 720, shooting a guy at the same time.
Sure. I mean, it does happen. You know, it happens.
I mean, if I could see the next James Bond movie with the dude on a skateboard, like, I'm in. Like, James Bond rolls down the street of Italy and he just kind of like jumps instead of doing that motorcycle sequence from No Time to Die, but do it on a snowboard instead.
Totally see it. Well, they had a nice 60th anniversary kind of dedication, which was really nice. There was a couple dedications throughout the ceremony that, you know, I get that it kind of added time. On the same token, it's supposed to be a celebration of movies, and I love that. The only thing that really came to mind is you're celebrating 60 years of James Bond. And granted, you guys have awarded the songs throughout the years, okay. But the Oscars would never recognize a James Bond movie. And to me, as much as I love the idea that we're celebrating the best in film, it's really ironic that you're also the same organization that won't seem to honor popular movies, movies that people love. Spider-Man No Way From Home. Look, you can make whatever arguments you want. More people love that movie than all the other nominees combined.
For sure.
So there has to be something said for we're celebrating movies. Why aren't we celebrating the movies that people love as opposed to just the ones that we, the Academy, loves?
Well, and I think it's hard to say, right? Because those movies where they're great and they're fun and they have some touching acting moments, they're not the same acting performance required to fully immerse yourself into a character like Jonathan Larson, right? With Tick, Tick, Boom, like King Richard, you know, things that characters like that are the things that make the best actor, best actress performances.
Sure.
Why a powerhouse like No Way Home couldn't be up for best director would be somewhere where you could see that probably filling in without a problem.
Or best picture. I mean,
because or people at least get a nomination for best picture, right? That's why we expanded it to 10 in the first place.
The whole reason.
Let's just go back to the 5.
Whole reason. That's Dark Knight. Is what kind of caused that.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's weird.
It's just insanely ironic to me that you're celebrating 60 years of James Bond, a franchise that you would never recognize during this ceremony. And it's like, that to me spells what I think many people's problem. Now, granted, I know film buffs like us diehards were like, you know what? I think it should be artistic. I should be this. I understand that. And I definitely agree with that. Mostly on the same token, there has to be some kind of recognition for other types of films that aren't coming of age story or the typical Academy fare. There are fantastic horror films that have been made, fantastic, all kinds of fantastic genre films that have been made over the years that barely ever get recognized. And if you're going to say you celebrate the best in movies, you have to acknowledge there are more than one or two categories in film. That's all I'm saying.
And there's definitely a lot more in some of these films than sand.
Oh yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. But it was a nice dedication. It was cool to see, you know, all the Bonds kind of on screen, especially after the last one, you know, was the last one for a while. We also got a Godfather dedication, which is more of a movie that definitely would be appreciated and respected at the Academy, but that turned 50 this year, this past week. That was pretty amazing to see Francis Ford Coppola and Al Pacino and Robert De Niro just together on stage. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and don't forget the big moment, Pulp Fiction, and finally getting to see what was inside the suitcase.
Yes, finally. And what was it, Troy?
It was the nominees for that category.
Yeah, it's weird. It was a weird transition.
I mean, you knew where it was going, but if you're going to do a dedication, that was a great way to do the dedication, right? The whole character doing the dancing, and like it was just a sweet moment for the three of them, especially because Samuel didn't get up on stage for what he should have gotten up on stage for.
Oh man, just think. And you go and if you go hunt down the actual his acceptance speech and Denzel Washington giving him the award, it was a great moment. And it's like wasted because only the people in that room really saw it, unless you go hunt that clip down.
Right.
It's too bad.
Should embed it in the show notes for this for everybody to see.
I feel like you're just trying to give me more work to do, but I'll see what I can do. All right. So, wow. I don't even know where to go. So Will Smith and Chris Rock had a rumble. And when this occurred, I believe 99% of everyone, including those in the audience, thought it was staged. because Chris Rock comes out. He's given a documentary award, I believe. And he's ripping off a couple jokes like he does. And he makes a stab at Will Smith. And then he makes a jab at Jada Pinkett Smith. And he kind of jabbed Jada in 2016 when she, you know, boycotted the Oscars because there wasn't enough representation. And she's like, you're on TV. That's like me boycotting Rihanna's panties. I wasn't invited. I still think that's a great joke. I don't care what anybody says. But here he makes a joke and he says, you know, he points at Jada and it's basically he makes a G.I. Jane 2 joke because of her shaved head. Well, Smith's wife does have alopecia, which is a condition that causes your hair to fall out, causes baldness. That's why she shaved her head, apparently.
And not just baldness. Like, you could lose your eyebrows, your eyelashes, yeah, your body hair. Like, it's all hair is the issue. And of course, you know, especially Black women, this is a big topic, right?
Yeah, I understand that to an extent. Because what happens next, I think it's funny because the internet is so divided on this. So,
America.
America. 50-50. It's always got to be 50-50, right? 50-50. Here I thought we were going to unite over this, and I was wrong. So Will laughed. If you go back and watch the tape, he's laughing at the G.I. Jane 2 joke until he realized his wife was not laughing. Now, I will concede that I think in those moments, sometimes celebrities will probably just keep laughing because they're trying to keep appearances up until maybe he saw that his wife was hurting. That's possible. I'm going to give him that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, we didn't see the camera angle of what was the conversation at the table.
Sure. Because then what proceeded to happen was Will Smith got up from his chair, walked on stage where Chris Rock was, and smacked him live. Smacked him. And I mean hard. Like, he smacked him. Then he goes and sits back down and he screams, not once but twice, keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. Keep my wife's name out of your effing mouth. And you can find the uncensored clip on Twitter, you know, or apparently I'll put it in the damn show notes somewhere. I don't know. According to Troy, that's what I got to do. So, but it very much was not staged, 100%. And you can tell that. And I think people thought, wow, is that staged? But no, during the telecast here in the States, we got it bleeped most of the way. But of course, Twitter waits for no one. So that was out there right away that this was completely unstaged. Will Smith really did just smack this man, just hit this man on live television. It was literally assault. Denzel Washington had to go over and counsel Will Smith and apparently told him, at your highest, that's when the devil comes for you. By the way, sage advice.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is like always the coolest man in the room. And then they just keep going like nothing happened. It's insane. And I should say that Chris Rock handled it with composure. He was very respectful of the ceremony. You know, even though he was in complete and utter shock, he just kept moving forward, got the category out, and then left. Sean Combs came up right after him and tried to bring love back to the room to keep the ceremony positive. It was a crazy, crazy event. Here's my quick take. We're going to discuss it, but my quick take is, if this was your work function, if this happened to be all the people defending Will Smith, if this was your job and you were having an awards banquet and somebody that works in a different department or something else came up and smacked one of the other employees, what do you think would happen? Would they have a job by the next day?
I mean, if they made contact at a work function, I don't know if there would be outright dismissal, but there would definitely be a suspended, maybe without pay for a period of time, or some like, you know, work mandated, court mandated, like counseling that you would have to go to.
Yeah. It's insane to me because so many people are trying to justify that. Well, he talks smack about that man's wife. I'm like, this is the line. This is the line. He goes to a ton of award shows. They always take jabs at the celebrities because that's part of the deal, right? That is part of the gig. You sign up for it. Is it great? No, I don't know why they necessarily do it. But on the same token, sometimes I think you got to take people down a peg because all they hear are great things all the time. And this is the same kind of narcissistic behavior that people have complained about Hollywood for having for years. And I love Will Smith too. He's been one of my favorite celebrity icons for quarter of a century at this point. And I am ashamed. I am literally ashamed. I've just lost so much respect for him for handling this. And people are like, well, what would you do? I would handle it like an adult behind closed doors privately. I'd definitely address it. I'm not going to walk away from it, but I'm not going to do it on a global stage that takes away from a lot of other people that worked really, really hard on this film and other films, including the Williams sisters who happened to be there. You just made this whole damn thing all about you. Okay. Your take.
I get emotion and I get the love and I get everything that he was said in his acceptance speech on what drives motivation sometimes. I think what people don't understand is that in that moment, you are being watched by 3, 4, 5 billion people around the world, right? And he knows that. Chris knows that. Everybody knows that. And now it's going to be watched by almost everybody in the world because thank you, internet.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with this is that we tell our kids over and over and over again that violence doesn't solve problems. And in that room, you have people who are trauma victims, potentially. People that have been, you know, victims of abuse, victims of violence of some kind, especially in the wake of Harvey Weinstein and everything in the Me Too movement around this particular group of people. And,
absolutely.
You know, for him to get to a point where he got up on stage, right? So this is something for Dolby and everybody else to think about from a logistic standpoint. Like, there's a reason why you only enter the stage on stage left and stage right and not in the middle, because you could put bouncers at the stages to make sure people don't go up on stage until they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But the act of him actually hitting another human being in that moment, when he's more than likely going to win the award later in the evening, it signifies everything wrong with humanity today, because you can't lose control. You can talk about it behind the scenes. You can say, I want you to issue Chris Rock a apology statement talking about alopecia. I want you to donate funds to Black Women Awareness Alopecia Fund. There's all kinds of better ways that this could have been handled than coming up on stage and smacking a guy across the face. Now, don't get me wrong. It makes for the most amazing television. Chris Rock was not wrong in his comment after he got smacked in the face. He's like, rock and roll, man. It's like, this is probably the best hour. This is probably the best thing that ever happened on TV.
Greatest moment in TV. Yeah. Greatest moment
it
in TV.
It sure was. Right, it was. Yep. Everybody was glued. Everybody was talking about it. The Oscar ratings are going to go through the roof for that last hour because they wanted to see what was going to happen at Will Smith's speech. Again, and this is where you get complicated, right? Because should he have been pulled from the ceremony? Should he have been taken into a back room and punished, or, you know, made to feel small or whatever? No, I mean, people make decisions. I have this philosophy in life that people don't make mistakes. People make decisions, and you have to then deal with whatever the repercussions of that decision are, or benefits of that decision, right? Everything is a learning opportunity. You know, Denzel wasn't wrong, right? You're at the pinnacle point of your career. This was Will Smith's first ever win, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
That moment, like, you just, like, you, I get it. Like, the emotions come up. I'm a very, you know, I feel deeply in a lot of situations, a lot of times, but I've gone to therapy. I've done the work. I've done the things that I need to do to understand that you don't hit another person as much as you want to, but you don't know what that person's trauma experience has been. You don't. And all the people that are watching, and now these are the people that have to work with Will Smith in the future. And are they going to want to work with Will Smith, or are they going to work with Chris Rock, right? In the moment. And I'm not taking away from people with alopecia. It's not about the illness. It's about the goal of the presenter is to entertain the audience. And it's a joke about a movie. And yes, in that moment, it's probably an okay joke because it's what the job entails, right? I mean, maybe he could have picked on somebody that wasn't Jada Pinkett Smith.
And maybe he doesn't, you know, people keep making the assumption he already knew about that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't. But I'm pretty well tuned in entertainment, and I didn't know about it because, you know, I don't watch her show. People are like, well, she's been very open about it on her show. Well, if he doesn't watch her show, how would he know that? I'm just saying, like, there is a possibility Chris Rock made the joke not realizing it, or he went too fast because Chris Rock's brain works at light speed compared to a lot of people, and he didn't stop to think about it.
Yeah,
it
happens. She could have very easily said, like, hey, I totally forgot about this. I am so sorry. Like, what do you need me to do to make it right? I'll make it right. And he's a good guy, right, for the most part.
Will Smith could have went on stage and said that to him. That would have been a completely different
take, right? Like, I could have came up on stage and I could have put my arm around Chris and I was like, hey, Chris, like, dude, man, you're a funny guy. But sometimes you got to remember your audience. And I just want to bring light to everybody's attention that my wife has alopecia. And he could have had a whole alopecia moment and for the alopecia community. And that could have raised awareness for alopecia. I mean, there were just so many different ways you can do it without violence. Even though the hit totally looked like it was like WWE SmackDown. Like, it looked like he stomped his foot, and it was just, from the camera angle, it looked super fake. It really did.
It did. Until you go and find the uncensored video and you're like, oh, yeah, that's a hit. That's a hit.
And then, of course, when Chris Rock was like, yeah, Will Smith just smacked the shit out of me. I was like, hey, can we just stay on the record, like divert topic for a minute? Kudos to the global audience, Japan, England, everybody else that didn't censor this. Because, like, why in the United States is, first of all, why is shit an issue, right? It's been used for years, right? That's how you got your cargo going across the water, because they didn't put the poop in the bottom of the boat, so the boats exploded. Ship high in transit. That's what shit stands for.
Funny aside, so random, but right? I respect it.
I mean, if you want to bleep out the F word, fine. I get it. But, like, there's no reason to, like, censor the stuff anymore. It's, like, everybody is desensitized to it because it's on the internet 24/7. You know, just let it. I mean, now the nip slip graphic during Will Smith's speech, we could talk about that later. That's totally fine. Don't need to see that on ABC. But it's like,
during Will Smith's speech,
did you remember how they put up the Oscar banner? Because Will was like, oh my gosh, I just spit on stage. I hope they didn't get that on camera. Like, apparently one of the Venus Williams sisters, like, had a nip slip, and that's why they put the graphic up.
Oh,
was to, like, dumped it.
I did not know that's why. I was wondering why that was. I'm like, that's a very odd placement. Did they screw this up, or are they just trying to get Will off the stage because he was going too long?
Yeah, what's
going
on right now? So that's the information I heard, was that, you know, during the, because they obviously have a delay, right? So as they're watching the delay, they're like, oh crap, we can't put that on. Quick edit, cut in graphic, because that's why you see the graphic blip in, blip out, blip in, blip out, because they're trying to, like, cover it up. And it's just, yeah. The people in the audience, anybody that is a trauma victim of assault in the audience, now has that brought back up for them because they witnessed this live. Anybody in the viewing audience at home who's had a trauma response to an assault victim now has this brought back up for them. I mean, it does way more damage.
And you normalized it. You normalized it by acting like it's no big deal. They normalized it. And that's where the Academy's got to be held responsible. I don't care how big a star he is. He should have been escorted out immediately. Immediately. Personally, that's my opinion. You went up and you hit someone during the ceremony. I don't care what awards you're up for. I don't care how popular you are. I don't care if I've sang Getting Jiggy With It most of my life. You do not deserve to be on that stage. And don't tell me I'm not a Will Smith fan, man. I saw DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince in concert. So kiss my ass. I have been a Will Smith fan for life. This is disgraceful on every level. There is no justification for it. There is no excuse for it. You can tell me all day, and I 100% know if it was my wife. No, I would not handle it that way because I'm a goddamn adult. I'm an adult. You handle it privately, or you handle it backstage. You don't raise your fist unless someone raises it first. That's the rule. He's not 14. He's a 50-year-old man.
And even though his speech were well done and understandable, what his...
I thought it was just... Well, theater.
I mean, you can look at it that way. You can say, like, I was playing this role, and this is, like, the fierceness of Richard. And I
felt like a cop out for your behavior.
But he never said, "I'm sorry, Chris." Like, all he had to say was, "I'm sorry, Chris. I lost my temper." You could have just added it to the speech. It would have gone a long way.
If the reasoning was because of the alopecia, or because, you know, he's tired of people taking jabs at his wife, and I'm sure he's had a bad year with the whole August thing. I mean, that's something that's hard to get through. And maybe it felt like that slap was meant for somebody else. You know, like, I wish I would have slapped him. You know, I don't know what the situation is, but he doesn't have to. I think it takes a really big man. If he really was a big man, if he was the adult in the room,
if he was Tom
Hanks, would have apologized. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't even put a name to it. I mean, anybody, if he was Denzel Washington, Denzel, I think, would have apologized to Chris, even if he doesn't feel bad for doing it because he felt it was necessary to defend his wife's honor. I think he still would have, for the sake of the Academy, for the sake of his peers, for the sake of the institution, because he realized he just brought, unfortunately, negative discourse into the proceedings. Right. And I think he should have been disqualified. I'll be honest with you. I think he should have been immediately disqualified, immediately escorted out. And that's the price you pay for doing something like that, for that kind of stunt.
Or you could have done like movies do, right? Smack him across the face, but then also bring him in and give him a hug and just stand there in an embrace, right? That's usually how they do it in the film.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I just felt like you're using the father of those women as your justification for what you just did. I'm very disappointed. Because you know what? When you watch the movie and you see how Richard handled it, when there were people coming at him and kind of going after his family, he stood up to them, but he never fought them. He didn't fight them. He stood up to them without fighting for them. So nonviolence was the answer. So you can't really use that as your justification for your provocation.
Agree. Oof.
It'd be crazy to see what happens with that. Let's get into the winners. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group or on Twitter at @buypopcorn. By the way, I bet you Chris Rock is not going to be doing any Jada Smith jokes anymore.
Ever.
Or he's going to have a whole set next year. It's just dedicated to her. Not anything personal, all based on filmography.
Yeah, I can't wait for the Chris Rock special to replace Chappelle on Netflix, right?
Oh, God.
Everybody hates Jada.
Jesus. Wow. All right. That's what you're saying Chris Rock would call it.
That's what we would call it.
Okay. Yep. All right. So best winner, we're going to go through these. Some of them will spend more time on than others. But, you know, Dune, like we kind of expected, took most of the technical awards.
Which I don't understand, to be quite honest, because it was gorgeous, right? The film, the cinematography, gorgeous.
Beautifully shot.
Sound editing, film editing. None of it was really anything spectacular. Like Lord of the Rings did it. Star Wars did it. It's like there wasn't anything like cinematography. Totally understand. This is the way that you get the blues of the eyes, and even though if you did contacts or whatever, but just like it was just visually a beautiful film from that perspective. But like sound, no.
Let's go through them. Let's go through the winners.
This will just be Dune.
Production designer, Dune 1. I could see that. I mean, it was beautifully orchestrated and set up. I mean, but I would argue West Side Story was designed for sure better, even though I think, you know, I don't think it's a magnificent movie.
But it was designed better, visually, artistically, the movement, sure, the sequences in between, the transition periods. Yeah, all of it. Yeah, definitely much better in West Side Story.
But okay. I mean, it Dune is a beautiful film. It's a stunningly shot film. I get it. I mean, production design, so he got a lot of sand.
A lot of it.
I mean, that's cool. All right. Cinematography, Dune, totally get that one. I think maybe Nightmare Alley, maybe West Side Story. Outside of that, I don't think there's really any real contenders for cinematography. Like we said, beautifully shot. Costume design. This was one, if this person didn't win, if this movie didn't win, I would have rioted. Yeah. Cruella won for costume design. Rightfully so. The fact that there was ever any, well, maybe it'll be Dune, maybe it'll be West Side Story. No, Cruella had the best costumes of anything this year because it stood in my mind. And I'm not a big, what were they wearing kind of guy.
Yeah, no, Cruella definitely was the winner here because like Dune could be one that would take this spot. But when you think about Cyrano and Nightmare Alley and West Side Story, it's just period pieces. And yeah, period pieces, costumes are amazing. And they look and the work to make those period pieces reenacted, definitely something to be appreciated. Yeah. But again, it's stuff we've seen in the past. Like Cruella was by far like a completely new design and especially the focus of the entire movie. So it should have been celebrated.
Absolutely. I just love the costumes in that one. So sound, we're your category. Belfast nominated, Dune nominated, No Time to Die, The Power of the Dog, West Side Story, but Dune is the winner over No Time to Die and sound. Are you kidding me?
Or even over Belfast and sound, something so simple, yet you have to simulate explosions and traffic in a city and all of that thing that brings mm-hmm. that to life, right? Especially when you're talking about the town in Belfast and everything that it went through during that period. I mean, there's just
a West Side Story. You're incorporating sound numbers as well as many sound effects. I mean, like it's a combined effort. There's a lot. Dune is not the one I would even think of.
No, definitely not. Because the spaceship makes a rumble. The wind and the sand makes a noise. I don't know.
Yep. Damn rumble. Ah, you said rumble. West Side Story. That's you're welcome. Funny. All right. Animated short film was The Windshield Wiper. I don't know that one, but congratulations to them.
I got that one right on my picks.
Which is pretty good since I'm sure you didn't see it either.
It's not.
Yeah. Live action short film, The Long Goodbye. Didn't see that one either.
Nope.
Original score. This one didn't surprise me too much, but it was Dune. Hans Zimmer, of course, which basically just boom, 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 boom. That's Hans Zimmer. Congratulations.
I don't know if it was that great. I mean, it
wasn't memorable. But then again, the other nominees were Don't Look Up, Encanto, Parallel Mothers, and The Power of the Dog. I don't know if any of them had a memorable score.
I thought Don't Look Up had a really great score. I thought for how crazy that movie was and what they brought to it, especially when they wrote the song for Ariana Grande, at the end of the movie, I was like, this is just fantastic. Like, I laughed the entire time. So I thought maybe Don't Look Up could pull out, you know, the underdog here.
Yeah.
I mean, Dune, I suppose when you have not much dialogue and you stare at sand for 2.5 hours, I guess the music is the movie. So, yeah.
That's true. You just stare at sand. It's like, oh, great, I'm at Tatooine. This is what Luke felt like. Ah. All right. So visual effects. This is, I'll never understand this as long as I live, but the nominees were Dune, Free Guy, No Time to Die, Shang-Chi, and The Legend of the Ten Rings, Spider-Man, No Way Home, and Dune 1. I would make a case, except for No Time to Die, the other three easily beat Dune in special effects, by far, in my opinion.
By far. Free Guy was very well done. I mean, I watched that movie again because of the special effects, visual effects.
Most creative visual effects of any movie last year. I think, hands down, should have won, my
opinion. For sure. For sure.
I just... Sometimes I feel like they get in the mode where, okay, well, Dune's the most well-respected. We'll just check these off the box. Let's get that done. Whatever. All right. Film editing. Dune wins again. Against Don't Look Up, King Richard, The Power of the Dog, and Tick, Tick, Boom. And this is where I'm going to make a case for you, Troy.
Mm-hmm.
Tick, Tick, Boom was a masterclass in editing.
That movie is tight. There's not a bad moment. The runtime is perfect. Like, that movie, just the sequence cuts between, you know, him and and Michael in the Is This Real Life sequence, or the Bohemian Days, right? That sequence in the apartment, and how he's cutting between the kitchen and the living room and trying to get everybody worked in. And then the sequence when they go between, like, No More, when they go back to their apartment versus the New York apartment in the east side and the sky. All of that is just quick cuts, and it just adds to the movie every single time.
Mm-hmm.
I had Tick, Tick, Boom on my picks on this one. Don't Look Up could have been in there as well. The editing was not there for Dune because it would have been 2 hours instead of 2.5.
Agreed. Or maybe 45 minutes, because that's all the action that happens. It's about 45 minutes long.
Yeah.
Makeup and hairstyling. Coming to America, it's an odd choice. Cruella, Dune, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, and House of Gucci, and The Eyes of Tammy Faye wins.
I think we called this. I think we called this one when we did the announcements, right? We said only the eyes were nominated.
Yep, exactly.
And the clip they showed during the telecast was like one of the ones where she had like all that blue eye makeup on, and it was like you didn't even know it was her, right?
Yeah, it was well done. I mean, it was. I think the only argument would probably be Cruella for me personally, because I just so stunning. But in the same token, when you see the transformation that Jessica Chastain made, and a lot of it was due to makeup, you kind of got to give, okay, respect.
For sure.
Yep. International feature film, Drive My Car won, which, you know, that you kind of get the vibe, okay, if it wins here, it's probably not going to win Best Picture.
Correct. But, yeah. I mean, this is one that I have my eye on now to go watch, because it's the only one I think I did not see from the Best Picture nominations. I mean, from what I saw from the telecast, it's like, this looks really interesting and probably something people should watch.
It's like 3 hours long.
Everything is 3 hours long now, though.
Starts to feel like a road trip itself.
Hey, I can handle 3 hours if I'm sitting in my own chair, because I can pause and go to the bathroom.
Sure. Documentary short, The Queen of Basketball was the winner, which was, I believe, the one where Questlove was up there to accept, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And... Or no, that was Summer of Soul. Was that Summer of Soul? Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize. So Queen of Basketball won the documentary short. Documentary feature was Summer of Soul. And that's where Questlove had to win right after the assassination attempt of Chris Rock. So I felt like he got robbed.
Chris Rock was assassinated? I thought Will Smith's character was assassinated.
Attempt. Ooh. Well, he assassinated his own character. But he, in an attempt to assassinate Chris Rock on a public stage. Yeah. Oh, man. What do five fingers say to the face?
Slap that.
All right. Original song. Again, nominees were Be Alive from King Richard, Dos Oraguitos from Encanto, Down to Joy from Belfast, No Time to Die from No Time to Die, Somehow You Do from Four Good Days, and the winner was No Time to Die, which, in my opinion, was the best song.
I mean, it's a good song. I mean, I still think Dos Oraguitos should have won, personally, but, I mean, if it wasn't Dos Oraguitos, it was going to be No Time to Die, because the Bond songs always seem to win.
It's actually not. If you go back and look at history, it's not true. They haven't really won as many as you might think.
I mean, it's what people live for, though. When the Bond movie comes out, it's like, what's the song in the opening sequence going to be? I mean, it's the thing they talk about the movie in the pre-production all the time.
Sure. I mean, hell, sometimes they have that movie done or the song done long before the movie's ever even filmed.
Right.
Animated feature film, winner was Encanto.
This is when I was actually finally this year. I'm like the animation in Flea is really amazing, and Mitchell's versus the Machines is a great movie. Like, I really thought that this one could have been one up for grabs. I mean, everybody loves Encanto. It's a fresh thing to talk about. But I mean, Flea and Mitchell's Machines could have truly come out of here with a win. And poo on people that say Ray and the Last Dragon was bad. I thought Ray and the Last Dragon was charming. It's just really, really, it's really a good movie.
I know a lot of people that love that movie. So, you know, I personally didn't see that one. You know, I don't watch many animated movies. Mitchell's the Machine was my pull because I love that. I thought that was really, really clever and smart and heartwarming and had kind of like everything you want for a family and then an adult and a child. Like, anybody watching it separate or together could work together on that one. But Encanto's a great film too, so no argument there. Adapted screenplay. Now, the nominees were Coda, Drive My Car, Dune, The Lost Daughter, and The Power of the Dog. Coda won. I was so happy.
Yeah, because Dune, you can't win here because it's only half the story.
It's true. It is. Ends on a cliffhanger, man. And I'm sorry, but that screenplay should have been tightened up. The movie should have been tightened up. But Coda, let's talk about Coda. For people that haven't seen Coda, it is an absolutely beautiful film. Absolutely beautiful film. Heartwarming, heartbreaking, just a well-told story. Really illuminates a section of people that really never have their story kind of broadcast, the deaf community, and really showcases the differences, you know, what they hear versus what we hear, their life as a deaf person and how they're trying to live their lives. And it's a lot harder. They have an obvious disability, but they're trying to live as everyone else. And, you know, just bringing those communities together, a person coming from a deaf family, her obsession with music. I mean, all of these things, it's just a beautiful story. Really is a beautiful story. As is the winner of original screenplay, Belfast, from Kenneth Branagh.
Yeah, this one was a surprise.
Really cool.
For me, I didn't think that this was going to get for screenplay. I thought Branagh was going to win for director, potentially, just the black and white aesthetic and the fact that he was a love story to his hometown and all of that. But the screenplay here, I mean, when you think about, like, Don't Look Up, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Worst Person in the World, I mean, all of these could have easily taken home the Oscar. I really thought Don't Look Up might have actually won here because I thought it was very original in its concepts and design, even though it like rips on an Armageddon and it rips on the 2020 election and all that fun stuff. But to like put all that together and make something that was actually entertaining, I thought was pretty fantastic. But Belfast ends up winning, and I think that's great, and I think more people should check it out.
Yep.
Absolutely. I saw it in the theater, not at some snotty film festival.
I saw Belfast in the theater too.
It was good. It was really good.
It's a beautiful story. And, you know, I kind of, it felt as soon as they gave it to him,
he wasn't going to win director. I'm like,
he wasn't going to win director. Yeah, that's exactly what I thought. Yep. It's like, oh, this is what everybody's doing. They're going to give Campion the director vote, which they did. Actress in a supporting role. Oh, is it? It's so hard not to love Ariana DeBose.
Yeah.
But she won for West Side Story, rightfully so, with Rita Moreno in the audience, who played the role in the original film, which was just beautiful.
If she wasn't in West Side Story, West Side Story does not do as well as it did, because Tony Maria, not to take anything away from her, but I mean, she sang beautifully, but at the same time, it's also kind of like, it wasn't great. Like, Ariana like stole the movie in every scene she was in.
Agreed, 100%. And I still don't know how I feel about Rachel Zegler kind of using social media, but saying she's not using social media, but she totally uses social media to get an invite to the Oscars. And hey, you know, worked for her. Good for her. She knows how to, she's already learning how this business works. So good for her.
And then they put her on stage with the tallest person in the room and then make a short joke.
Yeah.
That was just
Bazinga.
Bad writing. That was one of those first hour moments where you're like, okay, we went negative in this telecast.
And didn't it kind of look like he did not want to be there with her?
Totally. Did not want to be there with her.
That's just an assumption, but it sure looked that way. But anyway, Ariana DeBose, she had a beautiful speech, and I want to kind of paraphrase what she said. Well, not paraphrase, but I'm shortening it down. Imagine this little girl in the back seat of a white Ford Focus. Look in her eyes. You see an openly queer woman of color, an Afro-Latina who found her strength in life through art. That's what I believe we're here to celebrate. So to anybody who has ever questioned your identity, ever, or you find yourself living in the gray spaces, I promise you, there is indeed a place for us. I thought that was just a beautiful, beautiful speech.
Yeah.
actor in a supporting role. Oh, speaking of beautiful speeches, most heartwarming moment, I cried to this entire speech, probably because I love CODA, but Troy Kotsur won for CODA. He's a deaf actor. He obviously signed his speech, but it was well-deserved. Absolutely. Anybody that you thought might have taken it from him, or you felt he was the guy?
I mean, I thought that maybe Jesse Plemons was going to pull out a win here, potentially, because, I mean, he was really, really good in Power of the Dog.
Very understated.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's mm-hmm. like, if you're just like, you're there, but you're not there, but yet, man, it's like that movie does not work without Jesse. So I think that there was definitely a chance there. Tyrion Hines for Belfast even could have potentially took this mm-hmm. one. This was a wide open one for me. So, but kudos to Troy because he shares my name.
Yeah, J.K. Simmons for Being the Ricardos. I don't think that was a very good movie. Nominated or not, I just don't. Cody Smith McPhee for The Power of the Dog. He had a good performance, but nothing could trump Troy. I just thought fantastic. And in his speech, he said, "My dad, he was the best signer in our family, but he was in a car accident and became paralyzed from the neck down. And he no longer was able to sign. Dad, I learned so much from you. I'll always love you. You are my hero." It's a sad story, but also a beautiful tribute.
For sure.
Now we get to actor in a leading role and also winner of Best Slap at the 2022 Oscar ceremony. The nominees were Javier Bardem for Being the Ricardos, Benedict Cumberbatch for Power of the Dog, Andrew Garfield, Tick, Tick, Boom. I wouldn't have been mad at all if he won. Will Smith for King Richard, Denzel Washington for The Tragedy of Macbeth. And Will Smith won. So, you know, it's amazing because how I felt before the Chris Rock incident was completely different about how I felt when he won. I feel like Will Smith ruined the Oscars for me this year because I couldn't stop not believing what was happening.
Right.
And how nonchalant people were acting, and was it real, and having to look it up on Twitter and social media because I became a little obsessed with it, like I think many people did. How did you take the win?
I mean, the this is one of those things, right, where you just go like, should he get the award? Should he take the award away because of his behavior? Blah, blah, blah. You're still honoring the art, and the art is the art, and the art will be there on film in a canister for mm-hmm. years and years and years to come. Now saved digitally, so it'll be there forever as long as the internet exists and the server still holds it. I mean, it was, to me, like looking at the field, like Denzel and Andrew personally should have gotten it over Will Smith. And the speech is good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the speech. I mean, it was heartfelt. I just wish he would have said, "Chris, I'm sorry." That's it. Just, "Chris, I'm sorry. I lost my temper." Yeah.
Instead of saying, "Love makes you do crazy things," almost like you're justifying your actions. Not almost, you are justifying.
Because
your
speech is right. Love makes you do crazy things. Like the things you will do for your family, the things you'll do for your wife, the things you'll do for the people you care, the things even I'll do for Aaron, for God's sakes. I mean, scary as it would be, but I'd go to jail for Aaron, right? At the same time, it doesn't justify the behavior. You can't use your speech to justify the behavior. You can say, "Love makes you do crazy things, and I messed up. Chris, I'm sorry." That would have made the speech mm-hmm. bring the house down, right? Because he recognized he was out of line. But he never said, "Chris, I'm sorry." He said, I just wanted to make sure this was great for your dad, Venus and Serena, and I want to make sure that people understand the story and da-da-da-da-da. And people have been disrespecting me my whole life, and I get it, and I just wanted to rise above that disrespect and all the right words, but unfortunately it loses the meaning when you don't apologize.
Because that's ultimately the biggest attribute of maturity.
Because he disrespected Chris Rock.
And the ceremony
itself. And again.
And Richard Williams, I would argue, because again, he was a man who didn't rise to violence. There's a moment in the film where he almost does, but he doesn't. He still doesn't. So that's the thing, is like, he doesn't rise to violence. Right. You were a lesser man in that moment. And you're kind of using the name of that man to justify your actions. And I don't think that's right. I just, you know, I was very disappointed in Will Smith.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Not cool.
Yeah. But it was Richard Williams. You know, I kind of admire the movie itself. And even though I felt like for great portions of it, I'm like, this should be about Venus and Serena Williams. But I kind of get where they're coming from. That, you know, he originally had this idea and they seem very supportive of it. And as long as, I mean, it's their story. If they feel it's important that they tell their dad's end of it, then okay. And they didn't show him as a man with no problems. Like, they definitely showed the stubbornness and a lot of other things in that performance. So it was a great performance. It really was all mm-hmm. around. Probably the best Will Smith has ever been.
That's a fair statement.
Actress in a leading role, Jessica Chastain wins for The Eyes of Tammy Faye. The other nominees were Olivia Colman, The Lost Daughter, Penelope Cruz, Parallel Mothers, Nicole Kidman, Being the Ricardos, Kristen Stewart for Spencer. This was one where people were all over the place with their guesses. I got this one right. Did you get this one
right? No, I had Penelope Cruz for Parallel Mothers.
It's a fair, I mean, a lot of people raved about her performance, so that's a fair guess. Well, Jessica Chastain, she's been in movies for a long time, and she's been a very talented actress for many years, so it's good that she got rewarded. And she said I really liked her speech. And in times like this, I think of Tammy, and I'm inspired by her radical acts of love. I'm inspired by her passion. I see it as a guiding principle that leads us forward, and it connects us all in the desire that we want to be accepted for who we are, accepted for who we love, and to live a life without the fear of violence or terror. And for any of you out there who do, in fact, feel hopeless or alone, I just want you to know that you are unconditionally loved for the uniqueness that is you. Definitely prepared, but I thought it was an excellent speech regardless.
For sure. And not written on a piece of paper.
No. She's a real actor. She memorized it. Director, Kenneth Branagh for Belfast, Drive My Car, Licorice Pizza, Power of the Dog, West Side Story. But I think we all knew Jane Campion was going to win for Power of the Dog.
And in case you missed that, people, that was what we call a transition in the business. Because Jane Campion wrote her speech on a piece of paper.
Yep. She sure did. She sure did. Oh, my goodness. All right. So, Best Picture. We have finally arrived at Best Picture. Well, I do want to say, Power of the Dog, or Power of the Slog, as I like to call it, because it's one of the worst-paced movies of the year that was nominated for Best Picture.
I mean, even worse than Dune.
Yes. Very much so. Thank you for saying that. It has wonderful acting, a fascinating and fabulous final 30 minutes, and actually a great story, but the pacing is awful. She is the last person I would have gave this Oscar to be perfectly honest.
Out of this list? Yeah, yep. By far. Yep. Yeah, I would have given it to Kenneth or Steven.
Yep, absolutely. And I know Steven doesn't need it, but in the same token, it's a beautifully shot film. Like, it's perfectly staged. It's perfectly shot. It's beautiful. I still think In the Heights should have been nominated for Best Director because, my God, the set pieces.
Oh. Yeah, and I mean, and West Side Story, Steven's version, I mean, is not 61 by any stretch of the imagination, but it's damn close. The problem it had was Marie Antoni just didn't have chemistry.
None. And so Elgort, you know, it's funny, he wasn't there. I didn't see him on social media complaining. I wonder why, probably because he doesn't want to be on social media for some time. He's got some stuff going on. All right. Best Picture, Belfast, Coda, Don't Look Up, Drive My Car, Dune, King Richard, Licorice Pizza, Nightmare Alley, The Power of the Dog, and West Side Story.
Spider-Man No Way Home.
Was there anyone?
Wait, sorry.
Yeah, no, Spider-Man No Way Home was not there. And we are going to talk about in a second about those Oscar Twitter awards, but just hang tight for that. So Coda won. Were you disappointed? Because I think you were kind of leaning toward Belfast. Am I incorrect? Or?
The thing with Spider-Man No Way Home not being on this list, I mean, all 10 of these are definitely worth a nomination. So it's like, it's hard to say, right? I mean, I thought Licorice Pizza was fun. I thought from the artistic perspective, Licorice Pizza was going to pull out a win here. And then when you think about Power of the Dog is the classic, like, you know, Dances with Wolves, you know, period piece kind of thing. Like, that could pull out the win here. Dune, the way it was cleaning up the night, I was really nervous that it was going to win Best Picture because it's not. Belfast fits that indie art, black and white kind of feel. So for Coda to pull it out, for a streaming service to win Best Picture, because it wasn't shown in theaters, it was shown on Apple.
Yep, it was all Apple. They paid a lot of money for that at Sundance last year.
I mean, the tide has shifted, unfortunately.
It has. There's to a degree. Yep, it has to a degree.
And again, this is the way it should be. It shouldn't be about, I mean, I love going to the movie theater. You love going to the movie theater. When you think about the art, like, the art is still tell a story, put it on film. Where you show it, where you display it should not be the limitation of whether or not your art is still art. So the fact that Coda wins for the art, I think, is very much, yeah. But at the same time, this is the thing people are going to talk about, right? Coda is not the typical Oscar pick. It's a little bit more of the public, of the, not superhero genre, but it's more of the popular vote choice than the typical artistic choice.
True.
So maybe the Academy's shifting a little bit.
Maybe. There are a couple on here I would be okay if they won. Belfast, King Richard, maybe Nightmare Alley. But Coda, for me, was the movie to win. I mean, I really just felt like this has it all. This has everything that anyone who loves film should appreciate. It has a story that's well told. It's well paced. There's no fluff. There's no excess. There's characters you love. There's a real story you can get behind. There's heartbreak. You know, there's heartwarming. There's also a story of, you know, just a dreamer and all of those things and family. I mean, it's a beautiful movie in a time where I think we need to learn more understanding. And this is the kind of movie that's really trying to show you that here's how we get there. Listen more, pay attention, respect other people's disabilities, and try to understand where they're coming from is a lot harder than where you've come from sometimes.
Sometimes.
Yeah. But also don't smack people on stage. So there is two more categories I should mention. The Oscars had this stupid Twitter thing.
Oh my gosh.
Where I'm sure it's stupid. I shouldn't say that, but
it was bad. It was dumb.
It's bad. They started off with the favorite cheer moment. Okay. So the Oscars cheer moment category where voters chose their all-time favorite movie moment. This is the top five, which is bullshit. Neo dodging bullets in The Matrix. Jennifer Hudson signing And I'm Telling You in Dreamgirls. What?
Singing.
Who do you
even? Singing.
Yeah, singing. I'm sorry. Singing. What did I say?
Signing? I mean, it's okay. Understandable. We just got done talking about Coda. I get it.
Yeah, it makes sense. Sorry. Spider-Man No Way Home, the final battle for Avengers Endgame. I can't remember which way that went, but the winner was Zack Snyder's Justice League for when Flash taps into the Speed Force. Bullshit. This is 100% because Zack Snyder has a rabid fan base. Good for him. I think that's awesome. It got that movie made, and I think that movie was fantastic. But bullshit. This is just absolute nonsense that one for Oscar cheer moment. Do you agree or do you have?
No, I mean, especially if this is on Twitter. Okay. I mean, I don't remember how the poll voting was actually done.
It was all Twitter. It was all Twitter.
So it's like,
oh, they had a website where you could, I think, do it too, but it was mostly hashtags.
And it was just, when you do, and this is the problem with the popular vote, right? When you get the popular vote, the thing that is the most popular wins, mm-hmm. right?
Or you get the most weight behind, you get, you know, the bots going.
You get the army going.
Jesus Christ. And what was weird is it wasn't even movies from this past year, all time. What a weird thing to do. And then Oscar should have known as soon as the tallies came in. Oh man, we should scrap this whole category because this is ridiculous. Like this should not be. I just don't understand. I mean,
four of them are definitely like some of the best cinematic moments in history.
Sure.
For sure.
Sure.
Jump. Yeah, slow motion Zack Snyder running through open space and special effect. No.
Well, just wait. There's more Zack Snyder to come. So then they had one that did honor a movie from last year, the fan favorite movie. This is their way to make up for the fact that they realized the most popular movie of the last several years wasn't nominated for Best Picture.
The single-handed movie that saved movie theaters and the box office and Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they didn't want to nominate it because, you know, there's power of the dog action to be had, I guess, whatever. So they had the Army of the Dead won for fan favorite Oscar. The other nominees, just here, fifth place, Tick, Tick, Boom. Okay. Yeah. Fourth, Johnny Depp's Minamata. Nobody saw that. Tick, Tick, Boom, Spider-Man No Way Home in fourth, Minamata in third, Cinderella with Camila Cabello in second place.
No.
Shut up. Just stop it. No, nobody liked that movie except her because she was in it and her fans, I'm sure, because she was in it. But the winner was Army of the Dead. So Zack Snyder basically just wins in every category. And you know why it wasn't Zack Snyder's Justice League? Because the movie wasn't considered new. So it didn't qualify for this award. So they went for the next Zack Snyder movie. So ridiculous. They're never doing this again. Agreed?
I sure hope not.
Oh my God. Just
bad. Can we cut those out and give Samuel L. Jackson his time on stage, please?
Thank you. You gave up something I would have loved to have seen at the Oscars, and I think most movie fans would agree. Sam Jackson getting a Lifetime Achievement Award, basically. For that? For more Zack Snyder obsessives to love him? Hey, I'm glad you spend your time trying to get Zack Snyder's verse going again. It's never going to happen. Let's move on.
Samuel Jackson sitting up there in the balcony going, get this mother effing filler out of my mother effing shell.
Should. Oh, I wish he would have dropped an F-bomb. Especially like he came up shortly after the whole smack thing. He would have just been like, well, that's effed up. You know, just to kind of bring some some lightheartedness back. That is our Oscar recap. I think we had a lot to talk about. Is there anything about this ceremony or that we haven't talked about that you think is worth mentioning before we finish up?
The fashion for this year, like, it was straight up black and white tuxes for most guys. There wasn't a lot of like flair for the guys at all. It was very standard penguin experience.
Except for Timothée Chalamet, who basically forgot his shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
And then
left it in the car.
The women's dresses, they all seem to have the same kind of cut to them. I don't know if you noticed that. Like most of the presenters, most of the award winners, like it was like the same design.
Like cut above the boob thing,
yeah,
right?
The curvage was just the same on every dress. It was weird. One designer was working in Hollywood, apparently, because everybody else was closed for COVID. I don't know.
Oh, by the way, I did love Chris Rock, Raw. Y'all just out here breathing air, Raw Dog. That was a great joke. So, yeah, that was funny. Yeah, the fashion, I never really pay that much attention to. I do watch the red carpet show. It was kind of cool to see Vanessa Hudgens and Andrew Garfield. They were in Tick, Tick, Boom. They had a moment on the red carpet, which was cool. But overall, I mean, I didn't really see anybody's dress that really popped to me, that or tux that really popped to me, except for Chalamet. And I'm just like, I mean, good for you that you cannot wear a shirt and be seen as cool. If I did that, I'd be arrested. So
I thought James's dress was really beautiful.
I did like that, where they had, you know, Cinderella, Little Mermaid, and Jasmine kind of giving away the animated Oscar award. That was cool. That was fun. Yeah, that was fun. You know, I really dug most of the presenters. You know, Jason Momoa is kind of always the coolest guy in the room.
For sure.
Seems like. And I don't think any other presenters really, really did anything too memorable that I could think of. What about you? Anybody really stand out?
Costner's speech around the directors I thought was really, really, really good. The problem with Costner is that he talks so slow. It felt like that Field of Dreams moment from the All-Star game again. It's like, we get it, Kevin. You're pretty to look at. Move on.
I did like how he starts a story telling about how, you know, I went to a movie, I went by myself, and you think the story is going a little bit dirty, and then he brings it back around. I thought was a really nice touch. Felt very Kevin Costner-esque, so to speak. So, yeah. So overall, like, what would you grade this particular Oscars?
Oh, man. First 90 minutes, I would give an F, maybe a D, and then, like, those last 45, man. I'm like, if you wanted to pick up the ratings, ABC, you sure figured out a way to do it.
Yeah, I'd give it about a
C overall.
Same, about a C. I would probably give, my favorite joke was probably Amy Schumer's, where she dug on Don't Look Up because they had the worst reviews of any Best Picture nominee. Yeah. And she said, I guess the Academy members don't look up reviews. And I thought that was
good.
Genius. That was really
good. The consolation prizes bit with Wanda and Regina, and she was like, I got this movie that nobody's seen, The Last Duel.
Ooh, that was ouch. Just
and it was a, ouch. And the best part was that it was printed on a disc, not even digital for the millennials to take a look at it.
I did like The White Man Can't Jump reunion.
Oh, yeah, that was right.
That was kind of cool.
That was pretty good, too.
Yeah, 30th anniversary, and that was neat. I love that movie. I still love that movie. I don't know, do another one. Well, I know they're doing a remake, so I
honestly
hope those guys all pop up.
The mashups of the reunions, I think, was probably the best part of the show. Like,
it was fun.
That like the whole like working in the suitcase with Pulp Fiction, I thought that was clever. Like, that stuff is stuff I'd stick around and watch for. That would get ratings up.
Yep.
Because it respects the original property, it respects the moment, it reunites the people we want to see, given the award presentations. I definitely think that's... And part of me is almost like... You know how the previous year, the supporting actor gives a supporting actress and vice versa. And I feel like the supporting roles should be at the end of the show. Like the fact that they start off the show all the time with those, like, I don't know. Just, I feel like those should be at the end. Like,
yeah, I kind of see what you're saying.
Make the last hour worth being the last hour. That way the people that want to watch the Oscars for an hour can just come in at 9 and be like, okay, these are the words I care about. Because let's be clear, like if you're going to cut the show and cut out awards and not do it live, the ones we only care about are best song, adapted, original, director, supporting, lead, best. 90 minutes, in and out.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still good with 3 hours. I still think if it's going to be that long, just start it at 6, man. Just start it at 6. You technically started it at 6 Central Time for Pacific, 7. You already started it because they started an hour ahead. They just didn't air that. So just do the whole thing and just start it from 6 to 10. People that are going to watch are going to watch
it. You have this whole concept now of multi-streaming services that you own, right? Like Hulu could be covering the red carpet ceremony, right? Where ABC could be airing the telecast of what's going on inside. And you could watch both, right? You could have ABC up on the TV and you could have Hulu on your phone or your tablet and be watching both at the same time. Like, we have multiple channels now in order to be able to do things like this. Or you could have a picture-in-picture where you could have inside, you know, on the left and the red carpet on the right. And then maybe there's some kind of interactive experience where you could toggle between the two. So if you wanted to watch red carpet on ABC, you could watch the ABC 1 feed versus the ABC 2 feed. I mean, there's definitely technology here I think they could take advantage of that would really move broadcasting a live show into a whole new realm.
Yep. Agreed. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this recap of the Academy Awards. Hopefully next year there will be a lot less slapping happening. That would be nice. You can comment on this episode in our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Our site is TheHollywoodOutsider.com. You can email us feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com. But if you have any thoughts on this episode, you disagree with us completely, be sure to reach out to us on social media at one of those places. Also want to say congratulations to Kyle Nolan, who won our Oscar contest this year. You son of a bitch. You got almost all of them. So good for you. Like I said, you son of a bitch. Next time I see you, I'll be sure to smack you across the face. I'm not going to see you, but apparently that's how we say hello now. It's okay as long as you're famous. Who knew? Be sure to subscribe.
I've been seeing you 2 years. Whack.
Yep. That's how you say hi now. That's how you know. That's how you
get a fist bump and shake hands. So.
All right. Well, we've had little to no extra time this month. And last week's South by Southwest episode was a 3-hour opus. I hope you enjoyed it if you haven't listened to it already. Remember, next week we'll be back with a regular episode complete with a brand new topic. In the meantime, thank you for joining me, Troy.
I'm so glad to have been here this morning for the aftermath.
Oh, my God. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.